South African President Jacob Zuma says former President Nelson Mandela is slowly recovering from his serious illness. Charles de Ledesma has more from London.
As prayers for the 95-year-old former president, who remains critically ill in hospital, continue, the office of the South African president says Mandela's health is gradually improving. The government's released few details on Mandela's illness, citing privacy issues, but some family members have, in recent weeks, given upbeat assessments of his health.
Mandela has been hospitalized because of a lung infection for more than 2 months. Jim Furyk carries a one-stroke lead into today's final round of the PGA Championship at Oak Hill outside Rochester, New York. Second-round leader Jason Duffner is a stroke behind Furyk. The Atlanta Braves' 14-game winning streak comes to an end. Miami Marlins scoring the game's only run on a wild pitch in the top of the ninth inning. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20, because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast, and I am happy to say that for the first time in 5 years, that's the last you're going to hear of my wife today, because we've kicked her to the curb today, and I'm joined by Dave Coleman of Three Stars Brewery, who is my sexy guest host.
How you doing, everybody?
Has anybody ever called you that?
Sexy?
Nah,
yeah.
Not. Oh, really?
Yeah, multiple times.
Just this morning.
Yeah.
and we're here. We're going to be talking Beer Week. The fifth annual DC Beer Week is August 11th to 18th. It's a celebration of good beer across the DC region, from how you make it to how you drink it and everything in between. There are going to be 180 separate events across the region. We're going to talk about all of them. We've got some of the folks that'll be putting those on, and from the great breweries in town, and it's going to be fun. Have you always been involved in the event?
I've been involved with DC Beer Week since I believe its second time out, maybe its third, but I've been on the committee for a couple of years.
I mean, Three Stars is a relatively new brewery. You've been around a year and change.
Yeah, we're celebrating our first year August 9th at Church Key. That it'll be a celebration of 1 year of having product in the market.
And I saw that Bentley you drove up in, so things must be really good.
Bentley, huh? You misinterpreted my Mazda.
Oh, it starts with an M instead of a B. So I'm going to kind of start with you, and then we'll get into everybody. I mean, you know, craft beers versus the mass-produced beers. I mean, craft brewing, as far as I know, was really home brewing for decades, and then suddenly it broke out, and there were a couple of craft beers that, you know, like Anchor Steam and all that that people knew about,
yeah,
and Sierra Nevada, and then suddenly, ba-boom, how'd it happen?
I think that the consumer just wound up getting hip to what tastes good as opposed to your mass-produced garbage. So, you know, craft breweries, we take pride in using fine ingredients and really pushing the envelope on what we're trying to put out there, and it's a craft.
Why can't the big breweries do that?
They probably could, but it doesn't fit their business model.
Their profile?
Yeah.
Huh. So DC Beer Week is really a celebration of craft brewery, right? Do you have the big guys here?
We do have the big guys here because, you know, you got to pay your bills, but we do try to focus on having – yeah, I know. You got to sell out a little bit. but, you know, we do try to focus on having all the craft breweries in DC, Maryland, Virginia area all really represented, so –
All right. So I'm just curious, what's the relationship between the craft brewers and the big guys? Are the big guys starting to try to co-opt it and buy, you know, the
smaller
brewers?
Yeah, absolutely. You've seen that across the board is the big guys are trying to co-op and purchase the small guys and use them as crafty beer as opposed to craft beer.
So you will have a Bentley.
No, I will not. No. I will not sell out to the man.
I won't sell out.
I will not sell out to the man.
That's right.
The revolution will not be televised.
All right. Everybody remember, let's see. Today is August the 4th, 2013, and Dave Coleman.
Right?
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some of the other folks that are here with us in the studio. David Moran is the managing director from the Old Ebbitt Grill, big participant in the whole Beer Week celebration. Kimberly Bender's here. She's the executive director of the Heirich House Museum. Everybody remembers Heirich beer from, actually, the last one I had, I think, was in the 90s. Is that the last time it was brewed? 2003. Yeah, it was a long time ago. Barrett Lauer is the head brewer from the District Chop House and Brewery. Travis Tedrow is the brewer from Gordon Biersch in the Navy Yard. Bill Madden, who is a return, let's see, you get your, is this the third time or second time?
Many, many times.
A lot of times.
Third.
And he always shows up with good food. So God bless you, mate. He's the CEO and executive brewer at Mad Fox Brewing. John Fleury is a beer writer for DCist and a home brewer. And Mel Gold of Gold Standard PR is in. Mel's running all the hoopla for DC Beer Week. So I asked her to sit in, too, so I don't screw anything up.
She keeps us organized.
No, that's good. So
thanks.
Dave Moran, let's start with you. Old Ebbitt's, I was telling you about my history there, has always been a great place to have a beer. Back in the day, the beers were, you know, you were getting fancy if you were having a Heineken.
Yeah, no doubt.
So now, you know, you've got this whole other world of craft beers. How do you meld the two at Old Ebbitt's so you can, you know, the old school guys can have their Budweiser or their Bud Light if they want it? But you have plenty of choice of craft beers. I mean, where do you keep all of it?
Well, I think it's what you just said. It's choice and making sure there is choice. As Dave was saying a few minutes ago, you know, you still want to pay your bills. And there's a lot of the people still coming in. They're drinking their Miller Lite. They're drinking their Stellas. But what we really are seeing is people are going to the craft. And 10, 15 years ago, we started, you know, putting on Sam Adams and Sierras. And they were the first to sort of come in. And but the last 2 to 3 years, we're seeing it's going local fast.
Now, do they know what to ask for? Greg Engert is an old buddy of mine. And when I go into like Birch and Barley or someplace, and he'll say, you know, have a Schlagenflugger. You know, it's from the upper northwest corner of Flanders, and they make it with, you know, pig's toenails. And, you know, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You know, I have no idea what he's talking about. I mean, do people know what to order, or are they just kind of saying,
I think they're saying, show me something. I think we're seeing a lot of folks who are coming in and they're asking their bartenders, and which has actually put a real emphasis on us to make sure our bartenders and servers know what's going on in the market. We've made great use of the breweries themselves are coming in and talking to the staff and educating them. One of the ones we put on about a year ago was DC Brow, and they went immediately to, we have 15 lines at the Ebbitt, pardon me, and they became our number three seller within the first 6 months.
Really?
Because, you know, you got a lot of tourists and a lot of people coming to D.C., and the first thing they say to the bartender is,
what's local?
What's local?
Yep. Yeah,
really?
So you're doing a lot of education with your staff, which is kind of key. I mean, that's the whole reason why local product gets sold, is because you have your servers and your bartenders actually motivated because they've met the people. They know the guys behind it, and they're motivated to sell it more.
So when they come through the door, I mean, are you setting up tastings for everybody there so that they can...
We do a lot of.
They help make the decision.
Yes, and what we do is a lot of times the brewers are coming to staff meetings before shifts and talking to them and tasting the staff on some products so they know. I mean, we talk a lot about not just beer but food too. It's, you know, there's a difference between being an order taker and being a salesperson. And if you can really give the customer an experience, and that means being knowledgeable and turning them on to good product, they leave with a really good story and a good vibe, and then they go out and spread the word of, hey, I was in D.C. and I had this great beer, and boom, next thing you know, their friends are coming in saying,
chain reaction.
Hey.
Yeah, absolutely. And your servers feel like they're doing a better job because they know more about the product that they're selling.
No doubt.
We do lineup all the time with bars and restaurants around town where I'll show up and I'll talk to the staff prior to them launching one of our products. So it's all about education. The more the industry people know, the more our product is being represented properly.
Well, plus it's interesting. I mean, you're talking about tourists, but D.C. is really sort of a small town trapped in a big city. So once the buzz starts on something, it's really like, you know, like contagion.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, the whole industry in the last 10 to 15 years. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, this town was, you know, a burger and a Miller Lite kind of place. And now you watch what's happening with restaurants, beers, music. This town is just really
well,
crazy.
So is this having an impact on home brewing? Are home brewers going, oh, the hell with it? You know, I can just go down and pop a bottle off of, a bottle of Raging Bitch or whatever, or a Blue Star, a Three Star, and, you know, and have you know, something as good as I can make at home, why bother?
No, I mean, it definitely feeds itself, where you are going and brewing something, then you try something new, and that spurs ideas. So you're thinking, wait, can I do that? And then when you do it, it'll come out slightly different. So that's going to spur even more ideas. And then you're like, oh, I've also seen that style there. Let me try that one also. So it feeds on itself and it creates a culture.
So,
and like, you know, when you enjoy something, you want to get completely immersed in it. And that's how really this DC beer scene's culture is becoming.
Well, let me ask you, Dave, what does this do to wine? I mean, because, you know, Nikki would pick wine over beer 100 times out of 90, and I really prefer beer. And
yeah.
I mean, what does that do to your wine list?
Well, to be honest, we're seeing it really nipping more than anything is more the spirits.
Really?
Yeah, the wines are still holding their own. The people still want a glass of wine with food or the experience, but what we've really seen is more of a if it's taking any percentage of the sales, it's out of the spirit side.
Well, because beers are tasting better now. So absolutely. Let's get to Beer Week, because you guys are doing a, let's see, what do I have here? You're doing a craft brouhaha.
Yeah.
So what is that?
Well, Mel and the folks from DC Beer Week approached us about being involved. And, you know, over the last couple of years, I'd attended with a couple of folks from the Clyde's Group, the big event Savor. And we knew that was out of town this year. So we thought there was a real niche to be filled. We consider one of the best parties of the year every November called the Old Epic Grills Oyster Riot.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. I
didn't get mine either.
Lost in the mail.
Everyone in the studio is coming.
This guy's not getting out of here alive.
That's right. Not without a ticket.
You don't invite us, you don't live. That's how that is.
But that party was always based on a food and wine pairing, and we thought, let's do the same thing. Let's do beer and food pairing. So we reached out to 9 local breweries and 9 chefs around town, and we're going to basically throw a 500-person cocktail party celebrating the marriage of food and beer with a local 19th Street band rocking the Old Epic Grill on Saturday night, August 17th.
Cool. Just remember that Nellis is spelled with 2 L's when you're sending out those invitations. All right. I want to keep everybody in the studio and talk. I want to turn to Kimberly Bender. Kimberly, step on up to the mic. We're going to talk about the Hyrick House Museum and how you guys have teamed up with DC Brow. But let's talk about Hyrick was DC's homegrown brewery for really almost a century, am I right?
He was the last of the Washington pre-prohibition brewers. His brewery closed in 1956.
And then grandson, I guess, Gary?
Gary revived the brand in the 90s. And
he just couldn't swing it because that point people weren't looking for cute local beers.
It was maybe a little early, a little premature, but... Yeah,
So now there's a museum? I've never been there.
Well, it's been
The Hyrick House there on the corner of, what is it, Mass and...
It's where New Hampshire and 20th Street.
New Hampshire and 20th.
Right below DuPont Circle.
So what's in there?
It is Hyrick's house. He lived there from 1894 to 1945 when he died. Everything inside is original to when the family lived there. So you're basically walking into his house the way he would have lived in there. We have all of their stuff. We have all of everything is intact in terms of wall decoration.
I mean, do you have his personal cookbook for how he brewed the beer?
That is something that we do not have. And I'm not sure if he had one.
Like Dr. Frankenstein. Oh, take the third book on the top shelf of the... Nothing?
No.
So Gary never had that?
Gary didn't have that.
That's a shame. All right, so we've got, what do we got, a minute? All right. Well, let's start talking about what you're doing for Beer Week with DC Brow, because you guys have, you're introducing a special lager. Is that correct?
We are. So, as you said, Gary had revived the brand, but he wasn't using any original recipes. We're doing a launch of what we're calling Hyrick's Lager, which is a throwback to Hyrick's Lager based on research done by a beer historian who came up with the recipe, a home brewer, Mike Stein, went to the National Archives, and there were a bunch of, there were actually 8 boxes worth of old invoices.
Really?
And he went through it. He recreated the recipe. He homebrewed it. And it was really good. And the history behind it was really good.
So we're going to take a quick break for commercial, but I want to talk about, you know, where we can find it and all of that in 2 seconds. This is David Nellis minus Nikki Nellis on Foodie and the Beast with Dave Coleman of Three Stars Brewery sitting in. the handsome debonair Dave Coleman. And we'll be back right after these messages.
Escape the everyday to the close-by Early Mountain Vineyards in Madison, Virginia. A relaxing getaway just a short drive from D.C., it has an award-winning tasting room, breathtaking views of the Blue Ridge, and the best of Virginia wines, locally grown food, live music, and slow sunsets. Visit earlymountain.com or follow them on Twitter at Early Mountain. Mention Foodie and the Beast and this ad for a free flight of wines at your next visit.
Each day, over 49 million Americans live in households that experience hunger, including 17 million children. Johnson's Florist and Garden Centers want to help. They're asking gardeners in the Washington area to plant extra this growing season, and at harvest time, bring that extra to one of their stores in D.C., Kensington, and Olney, Maryland. All donations will go to a local organization that feeds the hungry. Visit johnsonsflorist.com to learn more about the Plant a Row for the Hungry initiative. johnsonsflorist.com.
If talking and texting interferes with a walk down the street, imagine what might happen if you're driving. Focus on the road, not your conversation. Your brain can't do both safely. No dialing, no talking, no texting to arrive safe.
Hi, I'm Brooke Delaney.
And I'm Congressman John Delaney.
As a teen, I know not to text while driving. My dad and I ask you to focus on the road, not your conversation.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Okay, this is a fashion first and definitely fashion forward. Imagine models strutting the runway in fashion made entirely of chocolate. Charity and Chocolate, a night to enjoy D.C.'s best food, fashion, and fun, hosted at the Mandarin Oriental on Friday, September 6th. This sweet event will support the Heart of America Foundation's Books from the Heart program. Give kids the tools to read, succeed, and make a difference. Get your tickets before they melt away at charityinchocolate.org, sponsored in part by Target.
Yo, we're back on Foodie and the Beast. I was going to say with David Nikki Nellis, but she's MIA, and I've got Dave Coleman of Three Stars Brewing with me. I said brewery before.
How you doing?
I got my butt kicked during the commercial, and I can't afford to do that because he's giving me beer. And we're talking to Kimberly Bender, who's the executive director of the Heyrick House Museum. You guys in D.C. Brow have teamed up for a special lager that's going to be debuted. Which night is it?
August 12th, so the Monday of D.C. Beer Week.
Well, let's get the business part out of the way. How do you get tickets to that?
You can go online on our website, heyrickhouse.org.
Okay, can I get it off the D.C. Beer Week
yes.
site?
Yes, you can, dcbeerweek.net.
There we go. That was Mel Gold, everybody. And tell me about the event, aside from the unveiling of the lager.
So for us, it's probably one of our most special events that we've had at the museum because it's honoring. It's the first time we've actually had reviving the piece of the actual brewery with this recipe.
It's almost like finding hair with DNA and bringing it back.
And we're history geeks and we're now beer geeks. So I think it was just the perfect combination of everything. So the event is going to be more fancy than I think the regular D.C. Beer Week events. Cocktail attire.
Oh, she's throwing down the gauntlet to the rest of you.
Fancy.
Barrett's looking ticked off. I see that fire in his
Pinkies
eyes.
Up, everybody. Pinkies up.
Well, for us, you know, we're a very small nonprofit, and something like this is really important to our growth. We're trying to preserve the house. We're trying to bring back the history, and we're trying to get people to understand who Christian Heyrick was. He was a really important figure in the development of local D.C. He was a really large employer. He was the largest non-governmental employer and landowner in Washington.
The Washingtonians love their beer.
Yeah.
I think Warren Harding was one of his customers.
It's a thirsty town.
It is a thirsty town for good reason.
And so the event itself is really a fundraiser for us.
So what else is the house, the museum used for? Can you do private events
you
there?
You can. You can rent
really?
It for weddings. You can rent it for
I'm done with weddings.
Cocktail
Three's
parties.
I'm finished. Three is
you can
plenty.
Have a cocktail party.
Third time's a charm. Huh?
Third time was a charm. Thank God. I was running out of money.
We have an awesome garden in the back.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So you do that. And are there museum tours? And I mean,
there are regular museum tours Thursday, Fridays, and Saturdays. And then we have a really interesting event every third Thursday of the month.
We highlight
a local craft brewery. So we call that History and Hops. This month during DC Beer Week, we have Mad Fox, which is very exciting.
Hello, Mr. Bill Madden.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
That worked.
We're looking forward to it.
We are very much looking forward to it.
That'll be fun. All right, well, stick around because we're going to want to, you know, keep you in the room and talk to everybody. So who's next? Travis. Step up to that mic, Travis. Travis Tedrow is the brewer from Gordon Biersch over at the Navy Yard. And I'm a big Gordon Biersch customer out in Rockville. So,
nice.
So talk about one of the things that I've sort of wondered about is what is the dynamic in trying to brew beer for a restaurant in a restaurant? Do you guys also bottle and sell the beers outside of your restaurants, or is it only?
We do not. There's over 30 Gordon Biersch restaurants throughout the country, and save for a few out west, each one has its own brewery and brewmaster. So while they're all over the country, they're still local craft brewed beer. And you probably already know it, we focus on traditional German style lagers, which it takes more time. You know, you need bigger tanks if you're going to age something for 5 to 6 weeks. So it's less common, not because they're not as popular. They're very popular. That's 90% of what the country drinks, but they're actually quite expensive to make because of the time invested in aging them for so long compared to ales, for example. We do brew ales as well.
Just holding them in the tank space is where
exactly. You're, yeah. It's holding them hostage in your tanks for that long is costly, you would know. I mean, if you could turn them over every 2 weeks or every 6 weeks, you want to make the beer that turns over 2 weeks. So the brewer I brew at Navy Yard, our system is, you know, quite large for brewing just for that restaurant, but you need that larger equipment.
Well, speaking of Navy Yard and all that, because we were talking to Greg Engert from Neighborhood Restaurant Group, and when they open up Blue Jacket, they're going to have like 19 of those tanks. Where do those tanks come from? I mean, if you're going
to,
quote unquote, you know, craft brew, which sounds small, in these huge tanks, like where do you buy those?
So they come from majority of the stainless steel is coming from China these days. The brew house at Navy Yard, as well as at the F Street location, you're about to drink the English Summer
Ale. I'm not about to. I just did.
You just did. That's from the F Street location.
There ain't no about to around here. As soon as the beer shows up, I drink it.
It's a Canadian brew house with some lagering tanks from Italy, as well as some fermenters from China. So really all over. There's numerous people getting in the construction of brewing systems game as well.
Well, it brings up an interesting point. What's going on, and maybe you guys can all chime in, with craft brewing outside of the U.S.? You know, I lived in Italy for a little bit of time, and Prince Brau was really sort of the one. And now I'm wondering, I mean, are there craft beers popping up all over Italy, too, and all over France and Hungary and wherever?
And Spain. Yeah, there's a lot of craft brewing going on. It's funny because in Italy especially, they're taking kind of a nod from their wine industry and really incorporating that into their brewing industry. So they're doing a lot of really crazy stuff over there. It's pretty impressive.
So, in New Zealand, you know, there's a number of great hops coming out of that area, and it's not surprising that Australia and New Zealand has a number of craft breweries getting involved.
So are they trying to bust the American market?
I don't think they're trying to bust the American market. I think they're supporting it and following the lead in the United States.
But they're not trying to export their stuff here?
They're exporting some here, but basically what they're doing is their wine industry created the beer industry. You know, and so now all of a sudden these people want these fresh flavors that were coming out, like in the minerality of, like, you know, the Marlboro Sauvignons, things like that. They want those aspects coming out in their beer. And you can see that in some of the new hops that are coming out. Some of that same minerality and citrus flavors that are coming out through the wine are coming out in their beer. And it's beautiful, and it's different interpretations of very, you know, well done and done for a long time style beers.
No, I want to compliment John Fleury on his knowledge, because as a fellow graduate of the University of Massachusetts, you can see that we're well educated.
Minuteman.
He said minerality.
No, but no. Meanwhile, this dude is a psychology major, and I was a history major, and ain't nobody doing psychology or history around here, so it must not have been that good an education. All right, so back to Gordon Biersch, because I guess the other question is, what kind of impact really has your own brewing had on your business there versus other beers that you carry behind the bar?
Sure. Well, over 85% of the beers that we brew at Gordon Biersch, you know, are sold. They're Gordon Biersch beers, and we have a small guest tap tower, which has actually been pretty instructive to have a few extra beers on tap to see what sells. And it's interesting, so close to the base, the ballpark, it's some light beers, you know, some Bud Light, some Miller Light, and then the next biggest seller is actually IPAs.
Really?
Yep, absolutely. So it's very telling what people are interested in. I enjoy, you know, making lager beers. I'm new to it myself. I've heard somebody call it the gateway drug to craft beer because they're very drinkable.
Wait, crack beer? Oh,
right.
Craft beer.
Very accessible. And it introduces a lot of people that normally don't drink craft beer to some very drinkable, smooth, malty ales and lagers. So I think, you know.
So what's your background? How did you get into it?
Gosh, I don't know. I guess a series of bad decisions, right?
After jail.
Yeah. I worked on the Hill for a little while, actually, and I was homebrewing with my roommate. And all the while checking out books from the Library of Congress on brewing and the industry and finding that to be a very interesting career. I actually spoke with Barrett upwards of 7 years ago, and he seemed like a pretty happy guy. I didn't know if it was the job or just his demeanor in general.
But
I thought it was worth, you know,
the drinking
right?
helps.
I thought it was worth rolling the dice.
I gave him a DUI for just walking down the hall here.
Yeah. elements of physical labor and a mild bit of science and some marketing things I thought would be fun to try out.
Well, it has a real, you know, one of our sons, Sam, went to Ithaca College to study theater. And now it looks like he's at Neighborhood Restaurant Group. And he's sort of flirting with the idea of latching on to Greg Engert and apprenticing in to become a brewer. I mean, it's got a real...
Working man's appeal.
You know, one of the things is, not only that, it's got, I mean, you when you can really, it's like being a farmer in a sense, when you can really savor, you know, the fruits of your labor, it's a little dramatic, but there's a whole other element to that than it is, you know, when you just bat something out of your computer and send it off to somebody, for, you know, in a dopey desk job like mine.
It's still very janitorial, though. There's a lot of cleaning.
Everybody says that the brewers are glorified janitors, and I honestly take offense to that.
I think there's a lot of cleaning.
I think they're much.
Meanwhile,
closer
he's
to
wearing
being...
a shirt that says Dave.
it gets romanticized.
I had to look. But I think that, you know, a lot of people do romanticize, as you were saying, what it is that we do. But in the reality is that, you know, despite all the janitorial work that we do, it's also a lot of really creative stuff that we're also doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is much more like chefing than being a janitor. I might have a lot of keys on my hip, but that doesn't make me a janitor. So, and while great, you know,
I usually say that to convince people not to get into the industry, or they're trying to apprentice for free or something like that.
And right. You got to determine
really,
somehow.
Don't give up that, you know, lawyer desk quite yet before you think this
really
is
hot.
The cure.
Yeah, it's really hot. It's really hot. It's a lot of hard work.
I think some of the local brewers are starting to become like the rock stars of our town. I mean, the way famous chefs were. I mean, the customers want to see you guys, and that's why they're drinking it, and that's why it's hot.
But think of a guy like, you know, most of you probably know Craig Rogers at Border Springs Farms. He's become, you know, he's a farmer raising lamb. Trust me, the dude is a rock star.
He's a rock star.
And he's actually hosting Lambstock next week. We're going to that, which is Woodstock with good food.
Awesome.
People that now prize really what goes in their mouths and crosses their taste buds are starting to see it as just that. I think it's like, you know, it hits me that it's very much like farming. I mean, you're working with your hands and working with your brain and your back and producing something good to be consumed and not just, you know, basically flavored water.
Well, I'm still doing it. I still enjoy it. You know, it's a lot of work, but it's still very rewarding.
Well,
and I think it really revolves around the local var mentality that's been going on lately, not only with farming, but with beverages as well. I mean, even distilleries are popping up in D.C., so it's a very, very exciting time.
Well, that's Barrett Lauer from D.C. Chop House, whose lilting tones you're hearing now. So, you know what? As long as you're here and you jumped in, tell us a little about the Chop House, because we have everybody's voices coming in here. I want to make sure people know who you guys are.
District Chop House is a brewery and steakhouse, and it has been in Penn Quarter since 1997. So it was really a fixture in Chinatown, Penn Quarter, before craft beer was cool, and a lot of restaurants, you know, matriculated down there. I've been there 8 years. We make all the beer on premise. I call it from grain to glass, so I'm in charge of ordering all the ingredients, maintaining the equipment, formulating recipes.
Well, let's talk about ingredients again, you know, I can't remember if we were on camera or off camera when I said, if you ask, I mean, I love beer, but I don't know spit about it.
Right.
So, you know, ask me the hops and water, and after that, who knows?
Right. In fact, I even brought some hops. I don't know if you noticed hops hanging here, but yeah, brought some from.
Oh, those are hops?
Yeah, those are hops.
I thought they were just some stuff that grew there during
There's
the commercial.
No, but I grew hops in my backyard and thought it would do a nice visual or sensory experience with them. They aren't quite ready to be harvested yet,
well,
so they don't have the oils.
What they taste like right off the vine. But you know what? We're going to take a commercial break. We're going to come back to Barrett Lauer, and I'm going to take a taste, a little piece of hops off.
What you're
going to
do is you want to rub them. All right. Not taste it.
Cool.
Exactly.
All right. Well, this is David Nellis with Dave Coleman of Three Stars Brewing sitting in, and that's Barrett Lauer trying to get in. And we'll be right back after these words.
Come celebrate Central Farm Market's fifth anniversary season with the freshest produce, dairy, baked goods, fresh fish, meats, poultry, and specialty foods around. Enjoy music, wine tastings, cooking demos and classes, and kids' activities at two great locations, Sundays 9 to 1 in downtown Bethesda and Saturdays from 9 to 2 in North Bethesda, Rockville. Come out and see for yourself why Washingtonian and Bethesda magazines hail the markets as the best in the metro area. To learn more and sign up for the weekly e-blast, visit www.centralfarmmarkets.com. The two central locations in downtown Bethesda and North Bethesda, Rockville are kid-friendly and dog-friendly, have plenty of parking, and great food. For a listing of food artisans, events, and exact addresses, check out www.centralfarmmarkets.com. That's centralfarmmarkets.com. See you this weekend.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Signs, so subtle we may not notice them. Signs like loss of interest in activities. Signs like insomnia, fatigue, or withdrawing from friends.
Hey, dear, come play cards with us.
Even talking about wanting to die. These are signs of depression.
Hi, my name is Smitty. My husband, Congressman Jerry Connolly, and I urge you to take signs of depression seriously. Let your loved one know you care. Then seek help from a doctor or mental health professional.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David Nellis and my guest host, Dave Coleman.
What up, y'all?
What up, dog? Do we sound hip or what? Oh, yeah. You think I'm hip, don't you?
Yeah, you're totally hip, bro.
Yeah, totally.
You got
it. So, Barrett Lauer from DC Chop House, we're talking about ingredients. And let's do this. What if I was just going to make a beer, what would be the necessary ingredients there?
The four main ingredients are water, which is probably the most important. And you need a really good local water source. You don't want to be shipping your water in from somewhere else.
You can't turn on the tap here in D.C.?
You can, but most breweries filter the water first. Secondly, malt. And malt can be anything from malted barley and or grains.
What is when it's malted? What does that mean?
The grain is moisturized. The barley then goes to germinate or grow, and then that process is stopped with some kilning. So during that process, the barley seed converts complex carbohydrates into complex sugars, and then that germination process is stalled during the kilning process, and that's how we receive our malts. So we don't do all the malting ourselves, but also depending on the time and temperature that you kiln the malt, you get different aspects of the grain. And I get a lot of migraines from North Country Malt, which is a
partner. I've had a migraine before.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, here's my question. Thank you. Sure. I couldn't resist it. So when I'm tasting a beer, is it the malt that really or is it the hops that gives it,
It totally depends on the style of beer.
Bill Madden's doing the up and down, up and down.
That's the balancing act that we brewers as artists creating recipes.
So a lager and ale and all that, it's how you balance those two ingredients?
Right. Well, in addition to the fermentation by the yeast and the different yeast strains that you might be using, and how much malt and how much hops you're using, all that affects the flavor.
All right. Let me stay on that. Then it also matters where and how you're sourcing your malt and your hops. Because if you're dealing with a farmer that's using, I mean, I'm just making this up, but, you know, insecticides and all that, that's going to
affect. That's the terroir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's more than the ground. It's also the farming process, too, right?
Correct. Sure.
Yeah. So you have to be very careful that you're finding, you know, farmers and processors who are doing
maltsters.
So yeah. Would it, I mean, is the word organic, does it apply here? Is that what you're looking for?
It totally does. It hasn't completely saturated the market, but it is a movement that a lot of malting companies are going. The main issue is with mold that can develop with hops and or grain. They're very they absorb quite a bit of water, especially late in the harvest season, and are able. The whole crop is able to be decimated.
Yeah, it's pretty susceptible to that.
And, so
you know, a lot of things also you got to look for consistency. So, for instance, when you're looking at hops, you're looking for alphas, which are a rating of the acidity of the malt or of the hop rather, and you get batches week to week. You get delivery, and 1 week it will be 13.9, the next week that batch will be 11.8. And that's all stuff that that brewers have to take that science into play because you have inconsistency.
If they taught beer and chemistry, I think people would actually think.
I would have attended that class as opposed to going to Wendy's.
Well, they're actually doing that now. I mean, there's a lot of beer programs come up, especially like UC Davis, things like that, that are specifically catered to, you know, the chemistry, the biochemistry of beer and how this affects the lamb. Like, you know, you were talking about like fluctuations in alpha acids. Some of the hop brewers in Oregon are, most of their farm consists of QC labs and chemists, not typical farmers, to alleviate those fluctuations in the hop market so they can get the highest price on their hops, because you were talking about, you know, quality and consistency, and they want to be known for that.
Right, and that's why you pay top dollar for it.
Exactly.
Because you know batch to batch and lot to lot that you're going to get the same product, which means you don't have to adjust your recipe.
Hmm.
Just like chefs sounds going like, to a trusting you know their fishmonger.
Yeah. It sounds like what I suspected. It's a lot of work. I'd rather just pop the top off something.
There you go.
Down it. So, Barrett, we got a couple of minutes. Let's talk about you and DC Beer Week. What are you guys doing?
Yeah, yeah. So, let's see. First of all, I'd like to mention the Solidarity Summer Ale that we decided to brew as a DC, Virginia, and Maryland collaboration brew. And basically, it is an English Summer Ale. And this is the second year that we've gotten together and created a group effort of a beer.
16 and brewers from everywhere, from like DC Brown, Mad Fox, all the guys in here.
Should have named
obviously.
This beer Chaos instead.
Yeah, no, but it was actually a really cool day. We all met at they all met at DC Brow. They're taking over their vats for us, and everybody from like the guys in here, but also brewers came down from Baltimore. Rock Bottom and Bethesda, Lost Rhino came out from Loudoun Ashburn. County, Atlas Brewing Company, which isn't even open yet, but they were there. And everybody literally poured their own water in. The guys, you know, did their thing. Everybody collaborated, and it's going to be popped during DC Beer Week. It's going to be awesome.
Yep.
Speaking of DC Beer Week, before
Barrett
jumps on, give the website so that anybody who's interested can be looking while we're talking.
DCBeerWeek.net.
Clever.
Yep. Yeah.
So just be, you know, look for the Solidarity Summer Ale out at your local watering hole. Ask for it. And also, a lot of the breweries in the area also did their own version. So I kind of call the DC Brow version the mother version. And then all the other brew pubs, well, not that they're all brew pubs, but some of the other breweries made their own version of or interpretation of a summer ale. I know Bill did.
Yeah,
from
just
Matt
a,
Fox,
a real
well
quick spot.
Travis.
I didn't the for, F Street Gordon Biersch did in our flagship event for Gordon Biersch is on Tuesday. We're gonna have the DC Brow as well as everybody else's individual versions of that beer on tap for event. It's the English Summer Ale tasting. There actually will be a just for fun beer judge competition with a real Englishman that happens to be a fairly well-known brewer in this area as the only judge for this competition. So that's on Tuesday at 6 o'clock.
A real Englishman?
Would that be
a real Englishman?
Would that be Dr. Jones?
No, not Dr. Jones.
So Bill Madden, Bill, step up to the mic. We're going to take a commercial break in a second, but let's talk a little bit about what you guys did. Did you do your own sort of derivation of the?
Yes, we've been brewing English Summer Ale for some time at Mad Fox Marine Company. it's one of our flagships in the summer every year. So 3 years, we just celebrated our third year anniversary, so we've done it 3 years in a row.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Cheers. Yay, happy birthday.
Don't sing.
Why not? That's great.
Well, we've got time.
I can jump into Cask Night at the District Chop House. This is Barrett again. But so I have a I've been hosting. This is the third year, and for DC Beer Week that I've been hosting this event. But it's kind of a the beer geek kind of event of the week. And I actually moved it a little earlier, so I thought it'd be a little late to get involved. Everybody be kind of worn out because there are a lot of brewers that go there. But it is this Friday, August 9th from 6 to 11. And basically you've got casks, which are there's a secondary fermentation and a closed vessel, which is a firkin, which is about 11
that's
gallons.
That's one of the seven words you can't say.
Womp womp.
And so I've got about 20 different breweries that have created, nearly one of a kind beers for this event. You get a tasting glass, you come in, and it's unlimited samples.
Better
chop
like
house
arm
fare.
Everybody with the phone number for Uber when they come in.
Yes,
they're
yes,
actually
we do
a sponsor.
That.
There's
oh,
discounts.
I saw that, yeah.
There's a sponsor. We're half a block from the metro, so that's always a good option. And it goes from 6 to 11. There's food. You get a tasting glass, and you just kind of mix and mingle with a lot of brewers and industry folk.
It sounds like
and
fun.
Beer geeks.
And
yeah.
Beer geeks, yep, exactly.
All right, well,
and then I'm following it up the following day from noon to 5 o'clock with Cask Day. Same exact event. Tickets are $50. Get on call Sue Ellen at 202-347-1922 or chophousebanquet.com.
The man knows his radio. Good.
Right on.
All right, I'm going to go over to Bill Madden. Because Bill, one of the things we talked about last time you were in here, well, and a number of these folks, like the folks at Gordon Biersch and all that, you know, you're brewing beers, but you're also creating meals, food for people.
Yeah, we're a full-service restaurant.
Right. So how does that impact? Well, listen, everybody experiments. You know, let's put cayenne pepper in and see what happens. I get all that. But how does the kind of food you serve drive your thinking about the beers? Because you don't go too far out into the universe, I assume, when you're brewing.
Oh, we do. We go out in the universe. We go all over. And actually, we like to get everybody involved with the brewing process. We have the chef involved. At one point, we had our executive sous chef who was doing a Swaynard with us, which was a black...
Raynard. Don't use foreign words with
it. It was a black saison that he used his own spice mix for, and it went over big. So we get everybody involved with our brewing process.
This is yummy. What is this? This is nice and tart.
That is the Pilsner. That's the Praha Pilsner that's on tap at Van Fox Brewing Company.
Me like.
And here, try some orange whip.
Orange whip.
Nikki used one of those on me last night. It was fabulous.
Hey-o. She's not going to be happy about that one.
Oh, she's,
so much.
Right now she's going, what an idiot.
At least you know your wife.
And your audience.
Too. Yeah, that's a whole other.
Yeah, that's a different one. Oof. That's a really different one.
That's good. You want to
so that illustrates that. A lot of difference between the hops. That is an American hop. What hops did you use?
Citra hops on that
Citra
one.
Citra hops. And the Pilsner he gave you earlier was?
Czech Sods.
So the Sods is a little bit more spicy. And yeah. I don't know, I'll let you talk about it, Bill.
Orange whip. The Citra hops used in that would be really passion fruit.
I would be happy with the two of these right in front of a football game with some food. Yes, sir.
Melons, all sorts of different fruit flavors that you find in that particular beer from the hops. We're very fortunate. We've also got a very good contract.
There's a very... what am I smelling? There's a very distinctive...
That's the hop.
That's
aroma.
The hop, yeah.
That's a dry hop beer.
Mm. Yeah, and that's all the Citra hop contributes, all those passion fruit flavors that Bill was talking about.
I better call Uber. Sorry, what?
the Citra hop is probably one of the most sought-after hops right now, and if Bill didn't have a contract in place for it, I don't think you could get it, right?
No, you can't find this hop now. So that's another
Why
aspect.
Not? Why aren't they growing more of it?
In the United States, with the advent of craft brewing and the demand for hoppy beers, IPAs in particular, a lot of the American hops that would normally be used for that are totally bought up in the market. Such as if you don't have a good contract and a good relationship with your hop grower, invariably might not be able to get those hops.
So
not
a homebrew shop.
Yeah.
If you're an enterprising young man and you want to be a farmer, go start raising hops. No?
They grow in a very specific latitude throughout the world. This area is not particularly good for growing hops. We're a little bit south of where that band would be, that latitude. Oh,
thank God you said that. I was ready to kick it all in and go raise hops.
Nicky would love that. Well, David becomes a farmer.
You see her out there? her 6-inch heels in the fields helping me.
I think that was a show in the 50s, 60s. Yeah, that's a Green Acres.
Well, you were talking about Ithaca before.
That's a Green Acres.
On the East Coast, that area, Ithaca, upstate New York, used to be the hop growing area. And as Barrett mentioned, the fungus, there was a blight around the early part of the last century that completely wiped out that market, and everything moved out west.
All right. Well, with that happy thought, we're going to take a break for commercials because we've got to pay for the show. This is David Nellis with Foodie and the Beast, and my guest host, my co-host, my friend, my partner,
really good-looking co-host.
Really good-looking co-host, Dave Coleman from Three Stars Brewing. We'll be right back after these words.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Each day, over 49 million Americans live in households that experience hunger, including 17 million children. Johnson's Florist and Garden Centers want to help. They're asking gardeners in the Washington area to plant extra this growing season, and at harvest time, bring that extra to one of their stores in D.C., Kensington, and Olney, Maryland. All donations will go to a local organization that feeds the hungry. Visit johnsonsflorist.com to learn more about the Plant a Row for the Hungry initiative. johnsonsflorist.com.
You may think modern-day slavery doesn't happen, but human trafficking is in every country, state, and neighborhood, even yours. Still, there are more people held in slavery today than any other time in human history. Breaking Out Corporation is a proactive anti-human trafficking organization that investigates, identifies, and brings victims home. You have the power. Go beyond just talk. BreakingOutCorp.org needs your help to free human beings from sex trafficking and slavery. Find out how you can help by going to BreakingOutCorp.org.
All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nicky Nellis, except there ain't no Nicky Nellis today. I've got Dave Coleman from Three Stars Brewing with me, and we're talking to Bill Madden from Mad Fox. Bill, I just want to make sure everybody knows, because you're the only brewing operation in the Falls Church area, right?
Yeah, we are the first and only. We're right in the heart of the little city at 444 West Broad Street, right in Falls Church, and you can look up any information on us on our website at madfoxbrewing.com. And we've also got a ton of events that we're going to be doing all throughout DC Beer Week. Go to the website, check it out. We're all doing a lot of events, and we're looking forward to that.
And there's some awesome food at Mad Fox, too.
Oh, yeah.
I have consumed it. All right, well, stick around. I want to get John Fleury up to the mic. John is a little different. We have some of the city's most eminent brewmeisters here, but John is a... You're sort of an independent source for all of them. You're a food writer at DC, a beer writer at DCist, and you cover beer to the point where apparently at your birthday last week you overcovered it. Is that true?
Chiffazed.
Yeah. You got chiffazed. Yes.
Sometimes beer happens.
All right. So now I know you were a psych major at UMass, living one floor above where I used to live.
Yep.
God bless you, mate. But how did you get into this?
It's actually funny.
Bad habits?
No, it was
poor decisions.
Well, little column A, little column B.
So are your parents happy?
I actually got my parents into beer, but that's a whole different story. No, I used to just simply read DCist and be a commenter, and the food editor at the time, Jamie Liu, she was like, "You really know about beer? You ever think about writing about beer?" She's like, and I was like, "No. You want to try?"
I just like drinking.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, sure, let's do that. And that was years ago.
As long as I can drink with one hand and write with the other, I'm cool. I got
ambidextrous.
Yeah. And that's, well, you know, it's a write drunk and edit sober, so.
But you sort of got into it at the right time because with the explosion of craft beers, there's so much more to talk about.
Yeah, I actually started in the wine business as a wine buyer way back in 2000, and then I slowly got my way into beer. And then, you know, I just happened to be in the city at, you know, the time where things are getting big. And, you know, it was serendipitous.
So do you find that, like, from a Bill to a Travis to a Barrett to a Dave, that different brewers have different almost brew personalities?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you can see styles, you know. I remember I was judging a beer competition between an American brewer and a Scottish brewer. I think it was last year. And it was to the point, like, I know the typical American brewer's attenuation rate and, like, how he styles his beers. Like,
well, tell everybody what an attenuation rate is.
One of the brewers want to step in and get all scientific about it.
It's science.
Okay, well, attenuation is the difference between the original gravity. That's the original amount of sugars that you've produced from the malt to...
Oh, my God. I feel what used to happen to me in chemistry class. I'm falling out.
To what's left after fermentation.
Just drink it.
All right, just
and that's
drink
the attenuation.
More like borophyll. All
right. Yeah, all right. Sorry about that.
Got it. Sorry, right, I brought it up. What? Sorry I brought
what?
It up.
What? Yeah, what?
It. Wake okay. up, everybody, beer.
All right, so I interrupted Cheers. You. All right, so you can see all of that. I mean, in a blind tasting, could you pick these guys out?
Oh, well, here's the thing. I know I've followed all of their breweries for quite some time. I know the styles that they produce, and I know some of the styles that they produce well. Like, you know, like I've known Dave Coleman for years, and, you know, I've been drinking Mad Fox for a long time, and I appreciate these styles. So I also pick up, you know, when you hear a song on the radio, you're like, that kind of sounds like that band. Mm-hmm. You might have never heard that before.
That's and a great it might comparison.
Be
a
it might be a different style, but you know some of, you know, the chord progressions, things like song structure, you understand those things, and you incorporate into it.
Boy.
Yeah, I know. It yeah. sounds like a stalker.
Dave Coleman's preening like a robin on a branch. Gee.
You know, that being said, that Dave Coleman, he's the worst. Yeah.
All right, so I guess I should ask, what's the weirdest beer you've ever encountered? And how did you get weird in a bad way? And how did you get around writing about
weird,
it? Without...
Weird in a bad way? I mean, there are many beers that, like, you know, some of the European beers are some of the newer fancy beers, like they get corks, and some beers get corked, you know, much like wine does. And that's really hard to deal with. But also, you know, every brewery is going to have their highlights, and you can't hit the target every time. You know, no musician can, if we're going back to music, no musician can constantly write hits. You're always going to have a clunker.
Yeah, Clapton can.
I was going to say, I beg to differ.
Yeah. Get out of here, John. You're out. No.
You're done. And you're the worst.
So, well, all right. So you're not going to name any names.
Well, no. Well, and also, there's a difference between thinking a beer is bad and then not appreciating the style. Like, there are certain styles I just don't like. I've had some of the best beers in that style in the world. It's not going to appeal to me.
Well, let me ask you about, there are some beers that really could be sparkling wines.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, as I said, I'm sort of the human experiment for Greg Engert. You know, he'll say, try this. And I'm always sort of reticent to say, you know, anything negative. But I don't get that. If I want something that hits me like a wine, I'll drink a wine.
Well, I think the intention is it's... To me, it's the artistic aspect of brewing. You're trying to push boundaries, see what you can do. Oh, well, I did this. Let's see how I can do it like this. Let's try and get the yeast in a champagne style, you know, things like that. Try and see what you can do and what flavors come up